Facebook.com. I'm Uncle Skeeter, inviting you back next week as we help to spread the cheese.
You're listening to CJSF at 90.1 FM in Burnaby. CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours. Share music and voices from genres and cultures around the world, reflecting you and the rest of your community. You make CJSF diverse.
Welcome to Scream Therapy. I'm your host, Jason Schurz. In October of 2018, I found myself in the hospital, sitting across from a psychiatrist who was telling me I had bipolar. I was sent home with a bunch of medication and laid on the couch for a week. I had my iTunes library on shuffle, trying to shake the hornet's nest from my head. Ever since I was a kid, I've been using loud music as a form of therapy. Punk rock and mental health have always been connected. This podcast looks at that connection through the lens of different guests. This is Scream Therapy. More than 10,000 people a year in the U.S. die from anorexia. Anna Troxell, the lead screamer of Austin, Texas hardcore band Mugger, was nearly one of them. As a survivor of disordered eating, Anna knows that she'll always be at risk for a relapse. It's because of that knowledge that she's determined to live a healthy life and help others along the way.
My name's Anna Troxell. I'm the singer of Mugger and the bass player in Creepoid and Lovelorn. And I'm in all of those projects with my husband, Patrick Troxell. We've been in bands together the entirety of our marriage. So that's 15 years of being in touring bands together. So I feel like it should count for 30. And yeah, being a musician is something new kind of to my life. I wasn't a musician until Patrick and I got married. And it's been really important since then. And it's really helped me a lot in terms of my recovery from my eating disorder. Having an outlet to voice some of the things that I've gone through and give inspiration to like talk about my story and share it with other people has been tremendously helpful. Being on stage in front of people has been really helpful in terms of just like coming back to my physical body.
I think a lot of people, when it comes to eating disorders, want to know, when did this start? Why did this start? And I don't have one myself, but I know people in my life who do, very close people. And I've come to learn from them that maybe there is no specific time when it starts.
Yeah, totally. Like, I think in retrospect, when I look back, I can see ways that I used my eating to communicate my emotions from the time I was a child. And I certainly can see the ways that my mom did that and her mom did that and other people in my family did that. But it was weird for me because I didn't grow up in a household where being thin seemed important. My mom wasn't on diets. She didn't go on like Slim Fast. And like, I saw my other friends' moms doing that, you know, and my mom was never really like that. She never commented on my weight ever. She never made me feel like, oh, don't eat that or don't eat this. So when I started experiencing symptoms of anorexia, I was like, I can't have an eating disorder. I was like, this isn't even something I care about. I'm not this girl. And it took me a while to just realize that like my motives weren't to be this skinny person. I was unable to communicate my emotions in any other way except to lose weight. And that's how I was trying to show everybody that I was like really upset. You know? I was like in a really bad spot and I didn't know how else to tell people except for losing weight. And that kind of happened for me right when I got back from being in a study abroad program. So I was in Rome for like almost a year. I got back and I was supremely lonely and I didn't know how to deal with that. And I just stopped eating. I just started losing weight. And I feel like that was my way of showing people that I was sad.
My understanding too, from the folks that I know is that, and it's like a lot of mental health conditions where a crisis can come really fast. You know, like for me, when I had my bipolar diagnosis, I had a 2-week period where the crisis just came on and I never even really knew.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like there's a quick escalation of this, maybe at a certain point in someone's life.
Yeah. Yeah. I relate to that totally. It just began as I'm going to go to the gym or whatever because I'm lonely and it's somewhere to go. And somebody reached out and was like, hey, like go to the gym with me. I had never done that before. I went to art school, you know, like I didn't play sports. I'm terrible at sports. I didn't wear sneakers. You know what I mean? So this was like this whole other world for me. And it just started out so innocently of like, yeah, I'm going to go to the gym to, well, I'm not going to eat as much to, within a span of a month, I'm completely inside this thing I can't control anymore. It just so quickly consumed me. And I wish I could explain it. It's not like we wake up every day and we're like, I love being on a diet. Anorexics wake up every day and they are like, okay, I'm going to eat today. I'm going to eat. I'm going to be able to eat. I swear I'm going to be able to. And you just sit down and you can't. You just find yourself completely unable to do it. It became so scary once I realized that like crisis moment, like, oh, like I'm not in control of this at all anymore.
When you think back to, you mentioned in childhood having some potentially disordered eating and not knowing about it at that point and maybe in the back of the mind, when things became quite clear to you, being scared every morning when you wake up, that sounds horrible. But what other sort of signs did you see as far as what it had come to, how far it had gone?
Yeah, it's a nightmare to wake up and not be able to feed yourself. And the reason that eating disorders right underneath addiction are the highest death rate for any mental disorder is because of the physical toll. So there's this like real scary physical thing that's happening with your body as well, because we need to eat, right? Like we straight up need to do it. And my body was really physically falling apart really, really fast. Yeah, I had like every physical symptom of anorexia. Like you can look them up. I was growing fur on my cheeks and on my arms because your body is desperately trying to keep warm because you're losing all this heat through body fat. I stopped having a period. I didn't have a period for the entire time of my sickness, but really quickly into it, like it was 2 months and it was gone. Every physical symptom you could imagine, like my heartbeat was super slow, like barely there. I would faint. And I was going to doctors. All I could say to my mom at the time was, I don't feel good, because I did not feel good at all. But I couldn't say I'm not eating, but I could say I don't feel good. So she was taking me to these doctors and they all said the same thing. They all said, she's fine. They were like, she's good. She's okay. This is what girls do sometimes. And my gynecologist literally told me, oh, you just sometimes you'll just lose your period. It'll just go away. What? No, that doesn't happen without a reason. You know, I already didn't think I could have an eating disorder because I didn't fit what I saw on TV or whatever. And then, so now I'm even having doctors tell me you don't have an eating disorder. So it was really hard to combat like how I physically and mentally felt with what people were echoing back to me, which is it's normal to lose weight. It's normal for women to lose weight.
I'm thinking back to with my family member that had a really severe eating disorder and me trying to figure out why it was happening and trying to explain it. And I don't think there was a reason that I could have come up with. It wasn't really my place to kind of explain it.
Mm-hmm.
And with you, people around you, what was it like from your end as far as trying to explain it or justify it? Or
yeah, once I had finally broached the subject with my parents, which took about 2 years and a half, probably, since symptoms started, till me saying, okay, I think I have a problem with eating. And this was only, I only felt comfortable doing that because I thought that I had found a solution. Like at that point, I had already moved to New York from Philadelphia. I had graduated from undergrad and I found a support group. Well, they found me. A complete stranger on the street handed me a brochure and said, you should come to this. So I thought, like, I've got this in the bag. Don't worry, mom and dad. I'm good. My parents were both teachers, so I wasn't the first person with an eating disorder that they had interacted with as teachers. They taught eighth grade, so much younger than when I presented symptoms, but they thought they understood what eating disorders were. Oh, it's about control. That's literally what my mom said to me. She's like, oh, you must be feeling like there's something in your life you can't control and you can control what you eat. And it's like, yeah, I guess. It's like the most surfacey, like psych 101 answer that you could give to like a human being who's experiencing this. Sure, there's some of that. There's a little bit of that, but everyone kind of feels that way, right? Like a lot of people feel like their life's out of control or things that they wish they could control more. And to take the lengths of starvation, like there's more going on there, right? I thought about something you said, like wondering like why, or well, maybe I just don't know why. That was something that I had to come to my conclusion when I was an inpatient. I was very much in the, I need to know why this is happening. I need to understand. And everyone in inpatient was like, don't even worry about that right now. Doesn't matter why. It just matters that you get better. It matters that you stop doing the thing. And you're so caught up and consumed with this need to understand that you're getting in your own way of just actually stopping the behavior. And then you can get to the why. For a while, I was so like needed to find my answer. I don't think I'll ever really fully understand why it happened, when it happened, the way it happened. I'm like, let it go now. I'm like, I don't know why. I don't know if I was born with it and it was always going to happen. I don't know if it was some behavioral thing that just triggered it. I have no idea, but I just had to get better. That was the more important thing. Let go. Doesn't matter why I'm doing this. I just need to stop doing it.
Yeah, I feel the same way actually about my own condition being diagnosed later in life. I was diagnosed when I was 46, not really knowing much about bipolar at all. Like I knew it was a word that people used to kind of throw around almost like an insult. Someone's being irrational or out there than they're bipolar. But yeah, being diagnosed and then kind of trying to figure out why, how, when, where. And you're totally right. It's not about that. It's about just coming to terms with the condition and trying to become stable. That's kind of the main thing. And then maybe once you're stable, you can start to look at those questions and looking back maybe at the past or whatever. But yeah, you're spot on with that. I think it makes a lot of sense just to leave it. And if there's an answer coming, it's going to happen later on with reflection or whatever. But trying to do that in the first stages of a diagnosis and treatment is just not the way to do it.
You can't even, your brain isn't working right now. When you don't eat, your body starts to just send the power to what it absolutely needs to do, right? So like your heart needs to pump. So it sends the power it has to pump your heart. You don't got extra room for deep abstract thought. You know? Like you don't have the RAM for that. And I'm sure you relate to that. Like you're just consumed by your illness and you don't have the extra like normal thinking power that you do. When I got into inpatient and went through those first couple weeks of just like feeding myself, it was like, oh my God, I can think again. Like, oh, right. This is what it was like to feel like a person who was able to make connections. I didn't feel just like lost. Could finally start to be like, okay, let's figure this out. You know what I mean? But I walked out of inpatient in 2006. So almost quite a long time ago. And I don't feel like I'm like, well, understood that. You know, like got that all wrapped up. I don't know. I don't know why. I still feel like it could happen again.
Yeah.
I always have to stay on alert because I haven't figured it out. And I feel like very easily I could find myself right back inside it.
Yeah, that's a major misconception amongst maybe the general public. I've been fixed or cured because now I'm medicated and I'm having manic episodes anymore. I'm not acting irrationally. I'm not super, super low depressed, suicidal anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm fixed. I'm all done. But yeah, it's a lifelong thing and people don't understand. I'm taking pills for the rest of my life. I'm not going to ever be quote unquote safe from my condition, right? That's something that I think a lot of people don't realize, or maybe they just forget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I feel like I was like afraid to get better in some senses. I was afraid to stop my behaviors because then I was like, well, how else am I going to be able to communicate that I'm not okay? Or like that just because I'm eating again doesn't mean this all went away. You know what I mean? Like yeah. It was really a struggle to be like, well, I know once I gain weight, everyone will be like, well, she's fine now. She's good. To this day, if I have a new doctor or whatever, they say, like, do you have any history of mental health or whatever? If I say, oh, yeah, I was anorexic for a long time, people will say, literally trained doctors, like, oh, you don't look like you ever had a problem with eating. You know what I mean? I'm like, okay. It's crazy. Eating disorder, people don't look any sort of way. We look all sorts of different kinds of way. Even at the height of our illness, there's no like one certain look that people have. And it's frustrating that I felt like I was afraid that I was going to lose that physical look, my way of communicating. And it was really difficult to realize the crushing realization that, oh yeah, I'm going to have this for the rest of my life. It sort of comes to you in waves, I think. And like for me, I was like, yeah, I'm better, but this is a forever thing. And everyone in my life, I'm going to have to tell them about, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like the people that you care about, you have to let in on that. And that's why I'm so vocal about it now, because I just want people to feel like they can talk about it, because I feel like that's what keeps it in people's minds. We're okay. We're good. We're not in our behaviors, but that doesn't mean it goes away.
Yeah, and just letting people know not only how I'm doing, but also what the condition looks like pre-diagnosis, post-diagnosis, and just ongoing. How does it feel to be having eyes on you like that? And sometimes maybe scrutinizing your appearance and with that history of knowing what you've been through, checking up on you and being a little bit wary about how things are. I know for me, like if I start acting a little bit strange, people sometimes are like, okay, what's this going to be?
Yeah, totally. I feel like I have to explain. For example, I was vegetarian from being like 15 on, and it had nothing to do with my eating disorder. I just wanted to be a vegetarian. I was like a punk and I thought it was cool. But it was useful for me when I became anorexic, because I could use it as a tool. Like, I don't eat that. I don't eat that. So it kind of got all tangled up inside. And then when I went to inpatient, I went to a very strict, no-nonsense state psych ward that was like, yeah, you're not vegetarian here. You know, like, you're going to eat everything we give you and you're going to gain the weight. And I felt morally that was wrong, but I did desperately wanted to get better. So I ate meat while I was in the hospital, and then I ate meat for another 7 years because I was afraid to do anything different. And I thought, I don't want to rock the boat. This is what's working. If I start eliminating one thing, who knows what will happen? But then I got to the point where I was like, no, like, I don't want to eat meat. So I decided I'm vegetarian again. And everyone in my family was like, oh no, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. She's restricting again. And it just made me laugh. This isn't really how I would do it. If I wanted to do it, I wouldn't do it this way. It's so much sneakier, I feel like, if I actually wanted to like start restricting again, and I wouldn't be very public. So it's like, yeah, I feel like everything I do now around food gets ultra scrutinized. My husband still, if I'm not hungry, he'll be like, are you okay? I'm like, I'm just not hungry. Sometimes I'm not hungry. You know what I mean? I used to just eat on a clock, a schedule for many, many years. That's just how I ate because that's what was working. But now I'm trying to be like, quote unquote, normal. I try to eat the way a normal person would. And when I do that, sometimes I'm not going to be as hungry. And my husband will be like, oh, are you okay? You know, and I'm like, I'm all right. I'm okay. But yeah, there's also the, like what you said, the physical aspect of being seen all the time and getting your picture taken all the time as a musician and having people comment on your weight who don't know. There's a music video we made that there were a lot of comments on there, you know, and I just have to be like, okay, you know, and just try to let it go. People, I think, meaning well, they'll do this body positivity thing with me where they're like, you look amazing. You look so great. And I'm like, hey, thanks. This isn't how I looked when I was anorexic, just so you know. And then B, I don't think that's useful for me. For me, I try to stay body neutral, which is my body is neither good nor bad. My body is no reflection of her, how I feel about myself, my identity. It's just the case I'm in. So like, that's what works for me. I know people mean well, but I think we should just not comment on people's bodies at all. You know, it's neither good or bad. It doesn't determine anything else. It doesn't determine how I feel about myself.
You mentioned someone passed you a flyer for a support group when you were at the height of your struggles. And I do support group facilitating, so I know how great those groups are. But I'd love to hear your experience with that group.
Yeah, absolutely saved my life. I don't even know who handed me the flyer because they weren't at the meeting. I was waiting for the subway in New York City. I was coming home from work and someone just came up to me and said, I think you should go to this. A week or two before, someone had approached me in the subway and said to me, my sister died of anorexia, please get help. It was clear. It was clear to people what was happening. So having that happen right before someone handed me the support group flyer was just seemed like sort of these bookends of, okay, like something needs to change. I was terrified to go. I didn't go right away. It took me probably about a month to work up the courage to call the phone number. And they said, yeah, here's the information and come and here's the ground rules, which I really appreciated that there were ground rules. So I felt safe going in, knowing a little bit about what to expect and what we could talk about, what we couldn't talk about. And the facilitator there, she was also a therapist, and she approached me after a couple of meetings and said, I'd like to see you privately. And I said, I can't afford that. And she said, don't worry about that. You know, we'll talk about money when we get there. And she saw me for a very, very low amount for a long time. And I learned, A, I wasn't alone. I didn't do this to myself. This isn't a mistake I made. So just kind of getting over that hump. Then I saw her privately. And eventually, she's the one that got me into inpatient, the group, and she completely saved my life. I don't know if I'd be alive today if I hadn't found them, because I was on this steamroll path of destruction, and I didn't know how to stop. I didn't know how to get off. And yeah, it's not like it instantly changed, but that was what led me to getting well.
What were your thoughts when that person said that their sister had been anorexic and had died? It sounds like you were still in the throes of it.
Angry at first. I was very angry. I didn't talk to people when I was anorexic. I was very in my own cocoon. Like, I didn't have friends. I didn't really, like, I went to work and I went home. Even just having someone talk to me was like, whoa, what's this? And I didn't like to be seen. I didn't like that she saw what was happening because I didn't talk about it with anybody else at the time. So first, anger. What do you know? You don't know anything about me. You're a complete stranger. Yeah. And then fear. Oh, like, I've heard about people dying from this. We all know Karen Carpenter and like Lifetime movies. Even though I didn't know this person, this was like a real person, not like a celebrity or whatever. And it was like, yeah, people can die from this. Your heart feels weird and you fainted yesterday. I was scared. I was like, wow, that's like a real thing that can happen. And just like sad, you're kind of like numb a lot of the time too. So you don't feel emotions the way I would feel them now, where like I feel them. They would come and then they would kind of go, you know, and I was sort of like just zombie out and tuck it away and not feel it. So like I felt those things, but I just pushed them aside. I couldn't deal.
What was the overlap between playing punk rock and struggling and in some ways overcoming your crisis? What was the relationship to music around that time?
So yeah, I didn't play music until many, many years later. I was actually not listening to music or watching movies or like doing anything. Everything made me feel bad at that time. And I kind of just retreated from the world, just sort of cocoon. When people mention a movie that came out in that time or a record that came out during that time, like that was my black hole period. Like I just missed. I did not participate in the world at that time. I was taking photographs and drawing. And so that was something that I would do. I would come home and draw. And I slowly started taking photographs of my body And that was a way to kind of deal and see it, because it was hard to see it. I didn't spend a lot of time looking at myself. That's another, I think, trope of anorexia, is that we're like staring into the mirror, wishing we were thinner. Like, I don't know a single person who does that. For me, it was the complete opposite. I didn't want to see myself, and I would hide myself. So taking photographs of my body was a way to look at it and deal with it. Since recovery, music's been very important, and definitely like writing music. In Creepoid, the band I was in was more like a shoegaze thing. I, at the time, thought I needed to write beautiful stuff about it, and I strove to make it not ambiguous, but just more like shrouded in this prettiness. And with Mugger, my hardcore band, I'm like, no, I can just say exactly what happened, you know? And I can be very direct. Do you wanna know? I strip the beauty away from it. Sometimes I worry about, if you write about something so beautifully, it seems beautiful. And I don't want anorexia to seem beautiful, you know? So I've tried to be like much more direct in my writing now.
Are some of those songs written with the purpose of helping out other folks that are going through their own mental health struggles?
Yes, absolutely. I'm a person that got better. Here's how I did it. Might not work for you, but here's an actual person that you can look at. That, yeah, it's still part of my life, but I'm alive. I eat. I have a great life. That's it. I'm alive. And that's what I want to show people. You can get better. I really, truly thought I would never get better. I thought I would either be sick forever or I would die. That's what I thought my options were. All I want to show people is like, those aren't your options. Your options are to live. Yeah.
That was my conversation with Anna Troxell of Mugger, mugger-tx.bandcamp.com. For more episodes of Screen Therapy, go to screentherapyhq.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Big news, the Screen Therapy book is available now. Screen Therapy, A Punk Journey Through Mental Health, tells my story and the stories of others who use punk as a catalyst for mental health. Like this podcast, it links the community-minded punk scene with the mental wellness of the punks who belong to it. To order the book, go to screentherapyhq.com. For merch, check out Screen Therapy on TeePublic. Okay, enough promoting. It's time for some thanking. Thank you for listening to Screen Therapy. Doing this podcast and talking to folks about punk rock and mental health has been a crucial part of my own mental stability, and it means so much to me that you're out there listening. Screen Therapy is created in the Cathet region of coastal British Columbia, Canada, on the traditional territory of the Klahoman Nation. Contact me at screentherapyhq.com or email me at screentherapypodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Let's talk about punk rock and mental health. Until next time, take care and be well.
CGSF would like to welcome you to a new series highlighting local artists and creatives alike. It's Studio 6, featuring live performances and panel discussions. Studio 6 is geared to bringing local content to you via CGSF 90.1 FM at cgsf.ca/studio6. Visit cgsf.ca/studio6 to find the latest performance or discussion. Want to contribute to Studio 6? There are lots of opportunities for brands and groups to join in. Just visit cgsf.ca/studio6 for more info.